As application developers, we would never dream of deploying our code without first testing it, putting it through a stringent process. But many times in our data tier, we forget about the central message of testing our code before we send it into production environments. This can cause all sorts of problems. So we're going to talk today about how you can test your database, why you can test your database, and what you need to do to get up to speed with all the tools and techniques that are available out there for making sure that your database does not have problems before you get to the production environment. We have a great panel of people today, and I will introduce them. Our panel members from within Microsoft, we have Gert Drapers. Gert is the Group Engineering Manager for Visual Studio Team System Database Edition. He's also been on the SQL Server team. He's worked on DTC, System.Transactions.
Yep.
Gert, very, very happy to have you today.
Thank you.
We have Jamie Laughlin from Microsoft as well. Jamie's a tech lead for Database Edition, and he owns the database unit testing piece of that product, and also build and deployment and data generation. Jamie, thank you. We also have David Reed. David is a senior program manager for the SQL Server Community and Samples Division. So anything you need to be open source from within Microsoft, David's your man.
That's right.
Just kidding. And from outside Microsoft, we have a couple of SQL Server MVPs. John Welch is chief architect with Mariner and also has created, I believe, the SQL Server Integration Services Unit Testing Project on CodePlex. And I'm Adam Mechanic. I'm a SQL Server MVP as well. I've written a book called Expert SQL Server 2005 Development. And I'm very interested in database unit testing. So, guys, what do you think of these statements? Often people say, I don't need to test. So I deploy it, so it just works. What do you think?
So what we run into is like a lot of customers or a lot of users that don't see the need to validate their schema before they actually are going to deploy this. And so one statement I always make is like, your schema is the contract between the data store and the application using it. And so you should treat it as such, and you should validate that contract. But many times we do see that a lot of people follow the principle. It deploys, so it works. Forgetting about like dynamic SQL execution, right? It's like, how do you, it's like if you don't test that, it's like, do you know that in that environment it actually works? SQL Server has great features. Deferred name resolution, like, can cause all sorts of interesting artifacts. It's like, yes, it deployed without errors. Does it actually work? Does it do the same things? So the whole goal, I think, about like why people need to test it is to actually prevent those, especially those runtime generated error situations, but also is like to have some confidence in that if they make a change, that that change is a valid change, right? That is like it's supported through the whole system. And that's one of the things where testing in the database area is an underlighted facet, I think, where people need to spend more time on if they want to get better quality.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
I'll take issue with the third bullet there. It works in tests, so it will work fine in production. How many people have ever found that to be 100% true? Nobody ever does a full diff of their production environment against test. Everybody's had some sort of error at some point because something was forgotten. A check constraint is in place where it isn't someplace else. Table goes missing.
So what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to duplicate our production environment in our test environment?
That would be best case. but you should have tests you can run against production. You should be able to take your test suite and run it against and validate production.
Won't that create performance in our production environments?
Could.
Okay.
But it's like, so a lot of these cases, right, that Dave refers to is like also are represented from the fact it's like, are you testing with a representative environment?
Absolutely.
Right? It's like not just the machine is like I'm running on an 8-way in production, I'm running on an 8-way in test, but it's like SQL Server is very receptive to changes in distributions of data. Right? Query plan differences like are easily introduced if you are having different distributions of data. So not testing with a realistic data set will cause all sorts of problems down the pipe. It's like, then you can say functionally it works, but it's like in reality, the business owner who supports that application will say, is like, no, it doesn't work. Right? You don't meet my SLA, you don't meet my performance goals. So at that point in time, it's like, well, it's like, you can prevent that by using realistic data sets to actually use in your test environment. Doesn't mean that you have to match your environment one for one.
You also need to make sure that you match the security requirements. You also need to make sure that you match the security that's used in production with the, in your test environment. How many times have we seen that it works fine in test, and then you go to production, and all of a sudden you can no longer do a select against the table or execute the stored proc because the service account that the website uses doesn't have access?
Right, security is always a big, big thing. Now, my favorite one is number two. I ran it once on my workstation, so it'll run fine with multiple users in my production environment. John, I was wondering if you've ever had any experience. I know you're really interested in SSIS. Does that affect SSIS parallel loads or anything like that?
Certainly it does. One of the big things that you get into with SSIS, a single developer working on it, particularly on a development box, you tend to not have as many packages running in parallel as is possible on a big server system with multiple cores. Common problem when we first started developing with SSIS was you'd have two packages run and you just wouldn't see contention between the same contention that you'd see when you put it onto a server with eight cores and suddenly you had 16 packages running in parallel and they start stepping on each other. So there's certainly, from a test pattern standpoint, you want to test those types of conditions to make sure that the dependencies between the packages are properly understood.
Also, I just wanted to toss in there that when you optimize a package on a developer workstation, AMDAL's law rears its ugly head, and you don't get as good a performance out of parallelism. You get better performance in serial. Mm-hmm. So if you code a serial package, it's not going to take advantage of all the hardware you're going to give it on a bigger system.
So the final one that we haven't really touched, it won't perform on this box, but it'll work fine if I just add a little bit more RAM. So how many of us have ever faced this scenario? And does that work?
They couldn't add that much RAM.
They couldn't add enough.
Well, if you don't know what your requirements are for your system to begin with, right, how can you make a statement about that you've validated the correctness of that of your environments to be working in that given situation?
Right.
It's like I've been building trading systems for stock exchanges using SQL Server. And it's like you cannot make these kind of assumptions while even load testing, right, on a given situation. It's like you need to have a representative environment to actually make sure that you can push through that many changes.
Not only a representative environment, but I think looking at the right things at the right time and not guessing. I think as database people, we tend to sometimes say, oh, it's I/O bound or it's RAM bound, but we really don't know sometimes. It might be network bound.
You got to plan for concurrency. You have to use patterns that will allow you to scale wide.
Right.
As well as baking the performance into your unit test, so you're checking that you're getting certain levels of performance with the set of test data you have. You can extrapolate from that based on higher level loads. But if you don't have those tests in there in the first place, then you don't know that you're going to have a problem down the road.
So but that's where we see the common mistake, right? It's like the common mistake is like, yeah, I have a unit test, I have a set of test data, which is absolutely not representative,
right,
or cannot be extrapolated, mm-hmm, right? It's like that might be working for it's like five invocations, but it's like now I'm going to push this up and I need to simulate 1,000 concurrent users. It's like what you're actually testing is that the same stored procedure is stepping on itself, mm-hmm, because your test is not valid. Right, so it's a lot of people don't think through their test design either, right? It's like they don't see the usage pattern, and therefore it's like they start from the wrong place when they start defining their, mm-hmm, test. And we see this all the time. It's like when we're generating unit tests inside our environment for a database, it's like, all right, it looks trivial to get started. But then it's like to actually write a unit test that makes sense from a database point of view that adds value also in the scenario where it's like you have 1,000 sessions, that is actually really hard and you need to spend time on that. That's why it's like testing is a separate proficiency.
Right.
You can't just take five QA analysts and click around a little bit and expect to get something that's representative of what the real world is going to deliver.
No.
So you think the dev team and the business owners and other people like that should be involved in the testing process?
Well, so how many people actually have a test plan? All right, it's like how many people are going to, while they're developing, have a plan and a strategy that says, it's like, this is what we're building, and this is how I'm going to validate this. All right, it's like one of the first things that we do is like when we build software, is like you have a plan, it's like this is what we're going to build, and then we build a test plan saying this is, and this is how we're going to validate this. Right, and you're going to execute on that. And that's a process that goes hand in hand. I have hardly seen any database data tier development projects where it's like that is the case. Sometimes it's like they do it at the stored procedure level. But it's like how many people are testing their triggers? It's like talking about concurrency, right? It's like one of your favorite topics. It's like what is the one of the biggest things when you're going to hit concurrency issues. Like right. Triggers is a great example here which can bite you in the butt if you're starting to talk about reloads. Today at TechEd, like I had somebody who was going to call the FedEx website, right, to retrieve status of deliveries from his SQL server. I was like, sure, you can do this, right? But it's like, is this a good example? It's like, are you taking care of the latency of that this call is going to introduce? Well, I need to wait on the confirmation anyhow. It's like, are you doing this inside a transaction? Oh yes, like we do five inserts and then we're calling the web servers. It's like, well, wait a minute. It's like, you're gonna hold these logs, right? So your concurrency is going down the tubes. You need to test for this or design
right,
for it.
Right.
Service broker.
That's what my advice was, service broker.
So Jamie, I know you handle the deployment side of things in VSTS Database Edition. Can you talk about how that product might help with some of these dilemmas in terms of actually creating a test plan pre-deployment, or can it help enforce that?
Well, a couple of things. DB Pro, we actually allow you to, we have database unit testing as a feature, and it runs on top of the unit testing harness inside Visual Studio. So we allow DBAs who maybe aren't familiar with C# or VB to write unit tests in T-SQL. And so from an availability perspective, it lowers the bar if you actually want to write some code. You don't have to implement an entire test harness when you're not familiar with ADO.NET to actually begin exercising your code. And from a deployment perspective, again, with integration and unit testing, if you are using our database projects, we will deploy your database project and make sure that the database that you're testing against is up to date. So we do work to make sure that the schema is always up to date. So from an iterative development perspective and from a test-driven development perspective, you can actually, DBAs can now actually enjoy that same cycle that C# developers have.
But someone at some point still needs to think about and plan for
absolutely
database test.
That's why all of our unit tests that we generate all come with a inconclusive test condition on by default, because just because we've generated a test and it runs and doesn't throw a SQL exception doesn't mean that it's successful, as you know.
Right. Actually, that's a good segue, I think. So why do you guys think that developers haven't really cared about database testing historically?
Developers think about their code as wrappers around T-SQL, stored procedures. They're testing their code. They don't have to test the database, right?
Because the database isn't code, right?
Yeah, sure. So I think one of the bigger dilemmas is that it's also the differentiation between stateful and stateless. Right? It's like writing unit tests or testing your database is harder because you're making state transitions. These state transitions get persistent. Means it's like if you have a function that just calculates something, right? It's like you can call that function over and over again, and it's like don't have to reset anything. So there's a lot of mechanics that you don't have to do. Mm-hmm. If you're writing a unit test, it's like you need to start thinking about how do you initialize? How do I clean up? How do I get the state back? It's like what is a valid state to begin with? So there are a lot of things that you need to do. And it's like if I even look in our own world, because we actually write unit tests that exercise the database more often than anybody else, I think. the biggest problem we have is, like, if we run this as part of the nightly build system or in the continuous integration suites, is like managing the state of all those servers, like making sure your service is available, it's cleaned up. It's like, oh, you had a crash, because, like, sure, that happens, right? It's like your stuff will crash. It's like, how do you recover from that? So getting a test harness in place that is robust and workable is already a lot of work. So I think from that point of view, is like a lot of people looked at this and said, like, actually, yeah, I might need it, but it's a hard problem, right? Which is why we are trying to lower the bar a little bit in terms of making it easier to enter into that space. Now, it's not all encompassing, right? It's at least a way to get started and to get people thinking about the problem space.
Right. It's so a good canary in the coal mine, especially if you're doing frequent builds, minimum daily. If you're not doing daily builds, you've already got a problem.
So kind of a continuous integration methodology is what you'd recommend?
Something that would let people know earlier in the process, when it's cheaper to fix a problem, that there is a problem.
Right, well, it comes back to another problem, right? And this is why we as a team worry about database unit testing so much. It's like, why? We care about how the data tier integrates into the application lifecycle, which exactly comes back to your point of continuous integration. All right, how many people today source control their database in some form? I don't care how, but are they doing it? And it's like, and the answer is like, no, right? It's like the majority of the people still don't version their schemas, while it is equivalent to source code.
Yes.
Right. So now you make these schema changes. How do you make sure that you're in sync with your app's versions? Right. So that's where a process like continuous integration is a tremendous value add. Right, and it's like if you see the companies that are successful in this, they adopted processes like this. Right, they move to an integration model. It's like whether either do nightly builds or continuous integrations, have testing as part of that to ensure their continuous quality, not just the one-off quality. Because quality is still perceived in a lot of cases as like, we are done, throw it over the wall, and then start validating it. Oh, it works. Okay, then you can give it to the customer or to the business owner.
John, we've talked all about schema
evolution
and store procedure evolution and things like that. And we've also talked about initial state. And I think with SSIS testing, that's a really big problem. How do you get
really
the initial
is.
State when you're loading 300 gigs of data on an ETL process?
It's quite difficult. So from a unit test perspective, we tend to take more of an approach of define the specific cases of test data to exercise fully the packages that you're running, and then do load testing as a separate piece. It is something that ties back into what we're talking a lot about things from kind of more of an application lifecycle perspective. One of the interesting things that we find, we do mostly business intelligence, so a lot of data warehousing. A lot of companies look at the build of the database as being something that's driven by the application that they're writing at that point in time. So they don't bother testing the database because they figure, well, if the application runs, that's all the database is there to do. And then a year later, they're like, well, hey, we've got 100 gigs of data and we need to start creating some reports off of this. And suddenly they want to start plugging in SSIS and other tools into that, and they realize the level of data quality that's adequate to run our application is nowhere close to what it needs to serve up business intelligence solutions. And suddenly testing the database to make sure that they're, the stored procedure is not leaving records hanging out there that it should have been cleaning up becomes a really major issue. So it's often after the fact that they start looking at that. We get to experience a lot of that firsthand in implementing those SSIS packages that have to do so much cleansing logic within the package to clean up all those things that if the database had been unit tested in the first place, probably wouldn't have been an issue.
So would you say that SSIS itself, as part of the transformation phase, could almost be considered to be a testing program?
It will, because SSIS is very particular about the metadata and the structure of the information flowing through, it will definitely highlight data quality issues in the data. So yes, I think it can be used to do some of the testing, but it's more of the canary in the coal mine, that it's going to tell you you've got problems in your database. It's not really going to help you fix those problems in and of itself, but it definitely can help highlight where the problem areas are.
You guys have all done unit testing. You probably had the experience. My first time doing test-driven development, when that light went red that I didn't expect to be red, highlighted something that would have taken me 3 days to figure out, but I knew right where to look because the unit test was broken.
Right. Well, it's like, because it's like you're in the, you know your environment at that point in time, right? It's there where you are. It's where you are at that point in time. You know what changes you made. It's like you have the context.
And I didn't know it would break that. Oops.
Right. And it's like, and in complex systems, right, it's like if you don't have the overarching oversight, it's like the architectural diagrams, how many times are they up to date, right, in terms of like what the relationships are, it's like you will find those things that break, which is why it's like, also it's like database testing on itself is like, it's an important piece. I think it's actually part of a bigger world, right?
Absolutely.
It's like, you cannot see this as in isolation. It's like, and the biggest value add is to make sure is like that your end application, whatever that means, is like if that is an ETL process or a process that loads information from, I don't know, a data stream, or it's an OLTP application, it's like the correctness of your data needs to be guaranteed, right? Your cleanliness of your data is like, if you cannot guarantee that, you're signing yourself up for a huge cost down the pipe, especially if you're building up a warehouse.
Right.
If you don't, I had a problem recently where it's like we had a customer situation where in their warehouse they thought they were keeping lineage data. It's like, well, it happened to be that lineage data was completely out of sync, right, and didn't represent the real truth. Fact was like that the logic they wrote to maintain it was completely wrong. So, and nobody bothered to look at it. It's like, yeah, in the test situation it works. So
many developers seem to believe that they can test up the web tier, and the test will go all the way down through the middle tier, into the data tier, pull some data back, come up, they can look at the data that's returned into the web tier, and that will give them a complete picture of what's going on and validate their entire application in one pass. Why should developers look to granularize their tests down into the data tier instead of just testing up the high level every time?
The web isn't the only, web is typically not the only consumer of that data. There's going to be other apps plugged into it. If it's of any non-trivial value to the corporation, you're going to have reports, stored procedures, you're going to have ETL processes, you've got all these other things that touch your database, and the web app is only going to exercise some small part of it.
You know, it's the standard argument about layered software development. You know, you just need to start treating the database as a very important layer of software that needs to get tested just like anything else. And you need to do boundary testing, you need to do out of bounds, and all those other, and we also need to make sure that we're hitting all the standard cases that we expect. You know, for instance, when you have a very complex join, that are you actually hitting all the standard cases that you may not exercise every time when you go through the web tier? And also, what happens if the web tier is broken for some other reason? Now all of a sudden you've exposed your stored procedures to bugs or regressions that could be introduced because you're relying on these other tests.
Right.
So if you're an ISV that's relying on things like plan freezing, what are you doing to guarantee that the plan you think you've frozen is actually being used?
Or that is the best plan,
for that
matter.
Plan.
So let's talk about the different kinds of unit tests we can but database tests that we can have. The first of which are unit tests. So I think these are the most common tests that we all do in our database. But I know that Gert and I disagree on what it even means to have a unit test in the database. So maybe we can go down the line. What do you think of unit testing in the database?
Something at the lowest level of granularity, usually in procedural logic, but it could be checking a check constraint, checking a trigger function.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, a unit test is like, it's a piece of the contract, the schema that you want to validate, right? And using unit testing as a way to validate the correctness there. That piece of code can encompass is like a single stored procedure invocation or a single trigger invocation, or it could be is like this is representing the business transaction, which actually is a whole sequence, maybe even with conditional logic in between, of all sorts of operations that happen, right? It's like, what does it mean to actually test an asynchronous service broker application, for example? right? You have multiple moving parts. It's like you cannot simply say, it's like, well, I'm going to test sending messages to the service broker queue and then I'm going to test receiving it. It's like it's an orchestration of activities. And so that still is, for me, is like is a unit test. And it's like we know it's like that's what the discussion we had. It's like unit testing versus functional testing. At the end of the day, is like I want to know is like that those pieces that I expose to my app tier, are they behaving the way they exposed, right? And it also comes to a point that Jamie brought up, was like, are you in your codes or stored procedures, right? Stored procedures, like are people checking if some value can be null, right? It's like C++, we've been very anal about that and saying is like you should be testing for nulls. It's like it was hammered into your head. It's like a database developer is like,
nulls, well, okay.
It's like nulls okay, right? It's like, oh yeah, it's like, and then feed it into that join, and it's like, watch what happens at that point in time. So it's just also getting into the discipline of treating T-SQL code like a serious programming language and bringing those disciplines and these experiences from the other worlds, where it's like we have been experiencing way more. It's like quality control in COBOL in the 60s was already a high thing, right? It's like that aspect needs to be brought into the data tier.
It's okay. Discipline we need.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Jamie?
To my mind, it's already pretty much been brought up. There are kind of, you have your basic verification of a small unit of code, you know, be it a trigger or a procedure, but also I think it's important to verify the contract between the data tier and your data access layer. So for instance, a lot of times you will be returning back multiple result sets as part of your query or your large stored procedure. You need to also, maybe you can't verify the data for whatever reason, or maybe it's a large data set and it can become challenging to actually look at that data. But you should at least verify the structure, because as Gert said, that is the signature, that's the contract between, you know, the two layers.
Right, so the problem with stored procedures being that there's no way up front to know if it's going to return no results, one result set, or 500 result sets.
Or the same shape.
Or even what the metadata is.
But you should be able to verify that the shape is the same and the types, because that's the other thing. What happens if somebody changes a string to an int?
Right, right.
Oops.
Your SSIS packages break.
So how about on SSIS? How do you define a unit test in that world?
So I look at a unit test as being basically any part of the SSIS package that I can execute in isolation and verify the results of. So the current framework that I'm working on will test down to the individual task level. So each one of those can be executed and it produces some result that you can verify that the task did what it was supposed to. In the future, I hope to take it all the way to the data flow component level, so that you can test each one of those, because to me as well, those produce a verifiable result. The API for SSIS isn't quite there to access that information yet. So.
Now, I think that you brought up an interesting point. You said that you try to test smaller parts of your package at a time, and I think in the application development world, our code tends to be so modular that we can do that same thing. We can test a small function, we can mock whatever's behind it, and we have everything we need. Now, in the T-SQL stored procedure world, if we start breaking things up, we tend to start creating performance problems. Do any of you have any comments on how to fight that issue?
So, I would argue about the statements to begin with regards to the performance problems, but I actually find it that it's like a lot of people try to overload too much logic, especially inside the procedure, that degrades performance, because like you're returning different plans and it's like now you're having to recompile your plan associated with the proc. So I'm a big fan of modularity, especially when it comes to stored procedures and breaking out different queries. The other part is like breaking out like all these things that are going to exercise dynamic SQL, right? Because that is the biggest cause of, or one of the bigger causes of pain in that regards as well. So, and I do think there is a good approach to layering, right? And if you start thinking about how do I want to structurally exercise or access the objects in my database, some people go overboard, right? They say it's like I have tables and I will generate accessors. How many tools are there around today that will generate CRUD stored procedures for a given table, right? And it's like, we had one company, it's like they came to us and it's like, well, we have 39,000 stored procedures. And I said, it's like, I hope you didn't write those by hands. But it's like, that's what, these were all generated CRUD procedures.
Most of which never get used.
Most of it don't get exercised, which comes to actually an interesting point. How do you, it's like you made a statement earlier about the web developer, right, clicking through his web app, exercising the database. It's like, isn't that enough? It's like, could be, right? But do you validate that? How do you validate? It's like, are you combining the code coverage information from your app tier and your middle tier and your data tier, combining that, and it's like, and get a heat map about like what code are you actually hitting? Right? It's like, so far it's like, and that's the point, that's one of the roles that my team plays, like getting those toolings available for data tier developers as well, because like we're still lacking a lot of those basic tool sets, right? Code coverage of data, right? It's like, how do I, what does code coverage mean for an SSIS package, right? Did I go to all the data flows? It's like, what does that mean? Right, how do I enforce certain behaviors?
How about for a select statement?
Right.
What does code coverage mean for a select statement?
Well, it's like, so if,
are
for example,
if
you're feeding in parameterized points into a select statement, you already have, right, certain characteristics that are driving this, right? For example, it's like, what is the null value? What is the default value? What is like, what is giving me realistic data or not?
And if you've got a subquery or using coalesce, you've got complexity just in that select statement that needs to be tested.
The thing I always think about is left outer joins.
Yep.
And
with
a condition in the where clause, is it even getting hit?
Yeah.
So
had a client that had a missing part of their in clause for many, many months. It was resulting in 600 million extra rows for every insert.
Oops.
They didn't know because they didn't have any data quality processes in place.
Right. And I think that's a great segue into performance testing, because if you bring back 600 million rows, you're going to cause some performance problems. So where does unit testing end? And do you include performance tests in your unit tests? Do you put metrics in there? What do you do?
There's two different aspects. I mean, I'll attack that because you've got small performance in the small statements. Your target is that 1 millisecond query. And the other is cap, is load capacity. And you want to be able to know when the system starts to cry. And there are two different kinds of tests. You can include performance in unit, but you need to do capacity separately.
Jamie, you had some
comments? Yeah, I was just going to say, similar to what you were saying. I think you don't have to go with, it's good to go with the full bore performance test, but I think you can get a very good indicator for, in a lot of cases, by just holding a litmus test to your unit test, and do they run the same amount every day? And if all of a sudden it takes three times as long or it takes half as long, chances are there might be something wrong.
So instead of actually looking for metrics like this has to run within 20 milliseconds, we would instead look at yesterday and the day before and the day before and the day before it ran for 20 milliseconds. If it runs for 40 today, we know we have a problem. Or if it runs for 200 maybe. An order of magnitude difference?
Yeah, or
like you said, if it runs for less.
Right, or less. Well, less is a good thing, right?
Well, it's like, but you still want to understand why it runs less.
Yes.
It's like, I agree that is a good thing, but it might also be because you're loaded up a regression that actually returns a different result set.
Right.
Instead of the 6 million rows, you now return only 2. It's like, that's a great performance increase, but it's also an incorrect result set.
Right.
So it's like, regression testing, right, is goes hand in hand with unit testing, right? It's like, why do you unit test? To make sure that, like, if you're moving from A to B, that you have a track record. It's like, this is how it was supposed. This was working. Now it breaks. So then you can go back to your source code controls. Like, what are the changes that we made, either on the app tier or the data tier? It's like, what are the changes between this window? And now you have a way to start isolating this. And the more often you integrate, the smaller that time window is that you have to go backtrack what introduced that change.
Right.
Right. It's like, if we wouldn't have performance regression testing like that, it's like we would be in deep trouble. Because like we sometimes load up regressions like that as well, right? And it's like you want to be able to detect that, back them out, and go on. But at least you need to understand what your results mean, which is another interesting side of testing to begin with, right? It's like, what is good validation of a test?
How do you test a test?
Well, right, but it's like, what makes you say, it's like, well, if you would write a test, right? Because like we have been talking, let's hear your opinion is like for a moment in terms of like, how do I make sure that this test is actually valid? Why, that it validates the right things?
If it works today and everything's good today, it must work, right?
They all ran. That must be good.
If the test runs, I can't even answer that question. I don't know how to write a test harness of a test harness.
it doesn't even have to go with that. It's just the basics of, well, as you know, test-driven development, the first thing you do to verify the test, same thing in T-SQL, is you write your test before you've written your stored procedure. You run it and you verify that, yes, you get back the error from SQL that the stored procedure doesn't exist. And then you stub it out, and then you run it again, and yes, you didn't get the error, you didn't get the results back that you wanted. So you end up running normally when you're developing a unit test, you're going to run that unit test probably at least 3 times before you do the thing before you actually.
So a test-driven database methodology. So do you guys have any customers doing this today?
Just well, it's like the more mixed, it's like you see that the role of database developers like is sort of depending on the size of the organization, right? But it's like if you look at the people that are like the smaller shops where it's like you have the person who's wearing multiple hats, it's like yes, you do see this, right? Because he's taking his approach that he uses for his application all the way down to the data tier. It's the organizations where we have separations of roles where I have the biggest concerns, right? Because this is where it's like the application development teams are moving forward, starting to adopt those test methodologies. And it's like the data tier teams are staying with their existing patterns and will stick with what they have and know and not evolve.
Right. Or anti-patterns.
Yes. Well, that's a different topic for next time, the anti-patterns talk.
So we've talked a lot about what kinds of tests we can create and a little bit about how to do them. Well, let's get into that just a bit more before we finish up. So Jamie, I believe, mentioned negative testing. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, in SQL 2005, you have a great capability to catch erased error. So you can actually testing that you get the error that you expect if you pass in bad values is as important, if not more important. And in addition, in an upcoming VS release, we'll also have the capability of doing client-side verification of exceptions.
So I think that's a great point that a lot of people, even in the application developer community, forget to do. They pass in known valid values. Do I get back what I want? But they don't actually think, is the application going to fail as it's expected to fail when I pass something bad, right?
That to me is one of the things that actually helps validate your positive test is having negative tests. Because if you have a negative test that pass, it often points to a positive test that wasn't set up correctly in the first place.
Excellent point.
True. So, but it also exposes your vulnerability, right? What is the most common case where something goes wrong, right? It's like it's that case where it's like you do select, say, a null value where you didn't expect it. It's like you try to assign it to an integer, and it's like since that's an intrinsic value, it's like you cannot do this in .NET. So it's like you load up an exception, and the whole stack unrolls. All right. So it's like testing for those cases is crucial, right? And one of the things is like we're not able to do in SQL what we are able to do in code, for example, is to do fault injection. Right? It's like one of the test methodologies that we use on our code is to inject faults at a certain point in the code. It's just like, all right, have it blow up here. Right? Is that case actually being handled? So what if you, inside your stored procedure, is like, make this select fail. Right? What is happening if I'm running into a CEF16 error situation at that point in time?
Force a timeout.
Right? So, or force a timeout, right? So it's those are very interesting criteria to run into. Is like, and it's like yes, that takes work, right? Because it's like probably needs that you start modifying the stored procedure or need to be creative about how to handle this because how can I generate a Ceph16 at this point in the code? Okay, well, you can. It's possible. It's just work.
Right.
But it does improve the robustness and the resilience of your underlying code, and therefore, also, at the end, it reduces your maintenance cost.
So, in other words, to completely test your database, you have to test every scenario, if possible. You have to test failures, and you have to be able to simulate them. Not just check known errors, but actually check for exceptions.
So the first response will be, so that is an infinite list of possibilities,
yes.
Right? So that's what you want to prevent. And that's where testers go nuts, right? Because they will come up, these are all the permutations. And step back to the business logic and say, is the business actually accepting this? Are these real business inputs? Because, and this is another thing where I think the world started to change, and this is mainly because of all the security pressures, is you should validate your inputs, right?
Right.
The reasons why you have so many permutations is that you don't validate your inputs, right? If you start validating your inputs, you see that your number of permutations actually goes down, therefore your test matrix goes down, therefore it becomes a more consumable problem.
Right, and Jamie, you just mentioned security, which brings up a great point that Jamie mentioned earlier, which is about who you're testing under. Are you using the administrative account? Are you using the actual account that the application's going to use? And how is that going to affect your testing? How do you deal with the cross product of negative testing, positive testing, and all the different security roles in your application? Can you speak to that a bit?
Well, so at least one part here, I think it's, when we were first designing database unit testing, we thought about this problem, and we actually tried to build in some support to enable two different connections in the test harness, one being the connection that runs your test, and the other connection being a connection that does things like deploy your database, verify the database after your test is run. And the whole reason why we did that is because we wanted to enable running and testing as the application tier, as a lower privileged user that maybe only has no access to the tables, they can only execute these sets of stored procedures, but at the same time, from a test harness perspective, you need to be able to get under those stored procedures and verify that the data is correct in the table, so you have to have those elevated privileges. So we went ahead and built in that infrastructure into the test harness. I'm not sure how many people are using it, but we did build it in.
So one idea I've read is that when doing very complex test matrices, you might do a continuous integration scenario and actually randomly test various conditions as you integrate, because it's impossible. You simply don't have enough time to test every possible combination. Any of you have any thoughts on that approach?
Well, so it's an approach known as model-based testing, right? It's where you start to model the state transitions or the possible states inside your system, and based on the state transitions that you have, a system can generate permutations. And we actually use that within Microsoft to actually test our own products as well.
Okay.
But it's the same problem that occurs. At the end of the day, your model needs to reflect reality, and it needs to reflect the business aspects of it. And if you keep your model too open-ended, even that system will generate too many permutations, right? And it's you will still not finish, because you will end up in an N-square situation where you have an N infinite amount of cycles. So it's a great approach, but you need to, the same thing is you need to use it accordingly to actually fit into the situation.
Right. So how do you know when that situation is?
Well, it comes back to my previous point. How do you validate the validity of a test and actually the results of the test?
Mm.
Right. It's the ultimate question that a test manager gets asked, or a QA manager gets asked. When are you done? When are you done testing? And it's if you go based on the number of permutations, the answer is never.
Never.
Right?
So there is a point where what is good enough? Do I have enough confidence that I tested the surface, the public surface of my data tier? And this comes back to my very first point about contracts. If you have a well-defined contract between the app tier consuming the database and the underlying data store, it's like you know what your test surface is, right?
Right.
It's like that is the surface that it's like I need to explicitly make sure, right? If you then can at least exclude the fact that it's like nobody has access to these other objects to begin with, you can start to dismiss a whole bunch of test cases.
Absolutely.
Where it's like, all
right,
this is like theoretically possible and it's a nice exercise to exercise my brain, but it's like in reality, this is not going to happen.
So you prune it down until it becomes manageable and then you just go from there.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a good short summary. I like that.
So we're about out of time, but I just want to spend a few minutes and talk about an area that we keep dancing around, which is generation of test data. And I think John would be a good person to start on this one, since he's the one who deals with the ETLs.
So for the unit testing, I actually like the unit test developer to create their own test data. So they have a very defined, this is what the input's going to be, and this is what I expect to get as the output. Now, when it comes to load testing for those things, you start looking at much broader sets of data. That's where a test generation tool like the Database Edition comes into play, to actually help you create that high volume of data so you can do the load.
So should we version our test data along with
Absolutely.
Schemas as they evolve?
We have done that in a couple of instances, yes. It does make sense.
And what do you all think of taking copies of production data, cleansing them, and using that as test data? Is that a good approach for developers to use?
As soon as you start cleansing them, you're not necessarily representative anymore.
So how do you comply with Sarbanes-Oxley and other
HIPAA is the one that scares me more than
That's the whole problem by using production data. Right? It's like, and then you can say it's like obfuscate them. Right? Take the social security number and obfuscate it. It's like, what does an obfuscation function do? It's like it turns a string into either a string that doesn't make sense. Now it's like, does the app tier still work with that unformatted string? It's like, so it's like there are all sorts of problems with obfuscating data out of production that makes certain layers in the architecture not work, which is why it's like, I think the combination of using production data to get the volume in combination with test data generation to actually generate realistic values, it's like is a good outcome of that request or that requirement.
Now, some of the data generation tools can look at patterns in the data in order to build larger data sets, so that we can do things like pre-test against a large database and try and exercise against performance and things like that. Any thoughts on those tools? Does VSTS Database Edition do that?
So we have a concept of ratios and we understand the concept of statistics, a statistical distribution of data. So to a degree, it's like we are able to take an existing or a data generation plan and generate a set of data accordingly, according to the same distributions. What we do not do is like here we pointed to a set of data and then say it's like, all right, explode this, right? There are tools that do that too. The main problem I've seen, some of these tools are rather good. It's like, it depends on the schema and how complicated the schema really is, right? In the most cases, like that's probably their demo case, it's like it will work. But it's like, if you have realistic, it's like if you have interesting key generation schemes or if you have surrogate keys, it's like I see this often go wrong. Right, because like that logic is not embedded into the application. They don't understand how it's working. If you use sequence tables, for example, to generate key information, it's like those kind of aspects are not taken into consideration. So in cases they work. I've seen good results of them. I've seen failures, which is not uncommon. So.
All right. Is there anything like that out on Codeplex or in your world?
There are a couple of test generators in Codeplex for Team Edition,
okay.
and for Database Edition. And that's one standing request we have is to create AdventureWorks at scale. Everybody wants a terabyte of AdventureWorks data.
Me too.
But that distribution problem is the one that we're going to solve, but it'll be after Katmai.
Okay, great. So I think we're about out of time. Do we have any closing comments anyone would like to make?
Test your databases.
Thank you very much.